Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome, you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me in his usual position and seat of authority, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
How are you today, sir?
Doing good.
Good. You know, one of the topics we've covered over the years on this program is the shadow man phenomena or shadow person phenomena. And there has been a lot of people around the world. And I mean that. I just got back from France, and I was talking to people at these castles that would encounter shadow figures moving about. And many of them would see these very strange shadows that would kind of evolve and then dissipate in front of their eyes, almost like a mist or a cloud. The one thing I didn't hear about over in France was the Hat Man phenomena. But we've covered that off and on throughout the years on this program. And there is a new documentary out. And I wanted to talk with the gentleman behind this documentary to see what he was able to uncover. The documentary is called The Hat Man. Documented cases of pure evil. We have a link to the documentary on our site or on today's program, so you can find it and watch it, rent it, see it for yourself. It's a great documentary, well put together, and gives many people a voice and a chance to share their encounters, where you can see the many similarities and likenesses of these encounters and the rare oddities, the differences in this. The director of this documentary is Kyle Macias. He's here with us today. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me on. I love the show.
Oh, well, we appreciate that. Thank you very much for being here. This is an intense documentary, and you know, it's covering a very niche angle of the paranormal, not just shadow people in general. It's talking specifically about the Hat Man. And I also want to make a mention that this may be, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, this may be one of the last projects from Rosemary Ellen Guiley that's released. I'm not sure when the timing of this came out and when Rosemary passed, but she is featured prominently in your documentary, weighing in on the Hat Man phenomena as well. So for fans of Rosemary, this is a great chance for you to see probably one of her last works as well and hear from the legend in the field regarding this case. But I've got to ask you, Kyle, why specifically focus on this character?
Yeah, when I did my own research on the shadow people in general, people, you know, they would mention this hat guy giving off a different vibe. They would say, oh, you know, this hat man felt more intimidating than these other ones, or he had different attributes. Sometimes he appeared more physical than the other shadow people. And so that got me interested, but my initial interest was my own family has seen the Hat Man as well around their house.
Oh, really? So you have direct contact with people that have seen this being?
Yeah, so this was years ago, but 2008 is when I found out my mom's side of the family has seen the Hat Man. And it was always at my grandma's house, and he would be on top of the stairs. One day, my mom and my grandma came home from shopping, and they came in the door, and they looked upstairs because they noticed something, and this hat man was on top of the stairs. It was a tall man, he was pretty tall too, about 6'4", 6'5". He had kind of like a fedora on, and then he had a long coat on, but he was all in shadow. And my mom slowly walked up the stairs because they didn't know what they were looking at, because the only person that lived there was my uncle, but they were like, he doesn't wear those type of clothes, you know, is that him? Is he facing away? They just could not comprehend what they were looking at. But my mom took a couple steps up, and my grandma said, Mario, because that was my uncle's name, and this thing didn't answer. But they both said later that they could feel this entity looking right through them. Like, it felt like even though he was black, they can feel his stare looking into their soul. And so my mom takes a couple steps up the stairs toward this thing, and this hat man rushes down the stairs, and as he rushes toward, she said she can hear footsteps like boom, 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 boom. But at the same time, he kind of turns into like a gush of wind, passes them, and goes out the door.
This being, I mean, first of all, that your mom was willing to move towards it and didn't have that fight or flight sense at first. What does that tell you? Because most people that encounter this get that pure sense of evil or foreboding that comes off of it. And in some instances we found, well, in a lot of instances, when people, even when they wake up to see these shadow people in their room, they don't always seem alarmed. They'll seem shocked that something's there, but it's almost like, oh, okay. And then they just roll over and go to sleep. When they see the hat man, it's a completely different effect. What does it say to you that your mom didn't have that initial runaway feeling or fear, that she actually approached it?
She actually did have a sense of creepiness. She told me that she doesn't even like talking about it. And if she's all, I can look up right now and just imagine it. She's all, oh, so I can't even do that. She don't even want to do that. She's all, I can. It's almost as if I'm right there again and I could see him. But she even mimicked his face to me, so she didn't see his face, but she mimicked the feeling that she got. If it makes sense, the way that it feels that he was looking at her is the way she mimicked his face, and it looked very creepy.
I get that, and I'm sure for our listeners, I mean, when you encounter this being, it is basically an outline silhouette, a very soft outline silhouette of this figure, but jet black. In some instances, people will see red or bluish glowing eyes, but really that's the only definable feature. But it is interesting, like you said, although they cannot define the features of the face, many will come away with an impression. I don't know if it's a psychic imprint, a telepathic message or what, but they'll get the sense of it scowling.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the perfect way
stare.
To say it. Yeah. Oh, you broke up a little bit. I'm sorry. I thought you were done talking.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no. People do. She did feel creepy. I think she approached it because she thought it was my uncle. But she was just going up the stairs a little slowly, like, what's this person or what's my uncle doing? And then that's when he rushed down the stairs. But she did have initial feeling of not so much foreboding. Well, no, there was foreboding, but not the fight or flight response. But that is the majority for people who have seen him in sleep paralysis, or if he's in their bedroom, they do have the fight or flight response.
But again, it's perceived kind of connection, right? When you see something like the hat man, most people feel that foreboding, unnerved feeling. And I always thought that's because of the radiation of whatever this being is. This kind of tells me a different feeling. If you have a different, what's the word I'm looking for here? If you have a different perception of the being, like your mom thinking, oh, this might be her brother-in-law or her brother, approaching him, there was not that initial fear factor, which means that this thing is not an emoting fear. It is only when it's an unfamiliar situation or an unfamiliar form that really the fear starts to kick in. So that tells us something about this as well. So it's not that this thing is just pure evil, but that it's, you know, then we have to start, kind of really looking into the concept of what does that mean? Is this thing, only are you sensing darkness and evil because it's something that's out of the ordinary and frightening to you, as opposed to something that is truly emoting evil. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. I have found in my research and through speaking with eyewitnesses that it seems as if this Hat Man can turn on or off its radiance of evil or intimidation, because some people, they see him and they don't feel anything. They don't feel no threat. They just see this guy. And for some reason, they're kind of not comfortable, but kind of like they're just looking at this thing. They're not really reacting. But then there's other people that right away they see him and they go, oh my gosh, that's the devil. He's coming for my soul. This is it. I'm going to die. And with the I would say 80%, 90% is the latter. And then 10% is the first part where people don't really feel anything. But when you interview people more, you kind of see that it seems as if this entity can turn on and off his own ability to, like, almost like he could mask his maybe evil, and then he can kind of radiate it when he wants to here and there.
Right. Or is it overall that this thing is, you know, it's our own perception filters that are giving us this fight or flight? Because it's interesting. I've talked to probably a handful of people, and by that I mean four or five people through 13 years of doing paranormal radio, that have encountered these beings and not been frightened by the Hat Man. But they had a different sense of what it was that they were dealing with. Most people don't really – they can't figure it. The ones that I spoke to that weren't frightened felt as though this was a human in a cloaked form, like they might have been spied on by – government sources, men in black type figures, and that they just happened to perceive them there. So it wasn't the same fear factor as though you're watching a dark, menacing being standing in the room with you. Now, in your research, I'm curious, has anybody gone back to do like hypno-regression to see if they could get more details? Is there more to this being, but all we're being allowed to remember is the dark form and outline?
Actually, that's very interesting that you said that. I was actually going to have a section in the film where we were going to do a regression on one witness, and we had it all planned. And it was going to be with a psychic who was going to regress an eyewitness who has seen the Hat Man to see if he could remember everything. Because not a lot of these people's encounters, they're kind of like UFO encounters or alien encounters where they don't remember everything in the encounter. And we were going to do it, but he backed out and he was very scared, and he didn't want to put his psyche in that place where he was seeing that thing again because his experiences were awful. But to answer your question, I did come across more than one eyewitness, which was very disturbing, where people do see features of this Hat Man, specifically of a wide grin and like a pale white face. But the grin usually fits his face as if he's like a reptile or something.
And right, I was going to say that in some of the drawings, it looked almost alien in nature, whether they were physically seeing the face or getting the telepathic imagery of what it was. They did have a very alien looking look, and I wonder if the hat is there to hide a misshapen head or something that, you know, or perhaps that is their head, and that's the way, you know, our brain is assuming it's a hat because of the way it's shaped.
Yeah. Most of the eyewitnesses say that it looks like a hat. They could see the brim, they could see it. Some witnesses say too that he takes it off and he's bald. I have some stories of that as well. But all the eyewitnesses, they say that it's not so much they're getting the messages in their head when they see him with the full face. It's more like they wake up and there's an actual man at the foot of the bed with this face and the hat. And that's usually called the grinning Hat Man or the grinning man. But this one was kind of a new phenomenon that I discovered, not new, but connected to the Hat Man while I was researching this. Because when I talked to other researchers, they told me that that's not really common for people to see the grinning man in their bedroom or around the house. But it seems as if this Hat Man could reveal his face when he wants to. And usually it looks kind of reptilian.
So I'm sure you formulated some kind of idea on what it is that we're dealing with here. Is this a ghost? Is it an echo from a time slip and we're just seeing a moment in time kind of replaying? And because people do have to remember, there was a time when people cared about their appearances, and you were kind of uncivilized if you weren't wearing a hat. Could it be that some of these houses are just haunted by spirits of the, you know, 30s and 40s and perhaps even early 50s, where people still wore hats and trench coats and had that look? Or do you believe that this is something alien, extraterrestrial in nature?
I go with the latter. I think it is more interdimensional alien, if I could say that. There's some theories on that where they're not necessarily coming from far away planets, but they're coming from interdimensional realities. I mostly go with that one because they seem to pop in and out of our existence very quickly. And the majority of the eyewitnesses are adamant that it's something evil. I know there's a few stories where they don't feel anything, but I think it kind of says something that the majority of them say he's evil. I like to liken it to like, say, you know, you always see the story on the news where their next door neighbor turned out to be a pedophile serial killer and they had no idea. Oh, he was such a nice guy. And he helped me with my groceries. He always said hi in the morning. And then they find out later that he got arrested for, you know, killing kids, whatever. I like to liken it like that. Like, just because there's an experience where people say, oh, I didn't really get a bad vibe, doesn't necessarily mean that this thing's not evil or not dark or doesn't have an agenda. But to answer your first question, I did come across something strange where this might have a connection with what the Hat Man is or Hat Men is all over pop culture. I started seeing the image of the Hat Man. So like, and it would also be synchronistically, like I would so happen to turn on the TV and it would be an old, you know, 1950s movie. And it would be like a man in silhouette with a hat and trench coat. And right when I turned it on, I'd be like, what the heck? What are the chances? And then I'd be driving down the highway and then there'd be a sign that said, is your home safe or something like that? And then it would have the image of a burglar on it that looked like the Hat Man. Or I so happened to go on my phone and then Freddy Krueger keeps popping up. And it's like all these Hat Man-esque imagery. And what I came across is that there's something called a sigil. Do you know what that is in the occult, a sigil?
I've heard it and I'm not grasping the definition of it at this point, but please go ahead.
Oh yeah. A sigil is basically an image or like it's a demonic signature of either a demon or jinn that you could conjure using that image. It has to be a certain image. And so I kind of came across this theory on my own, or I developed this theory on my own, where it seems as if this Hat Man is projecting its image all over pop culture to create its own, nationwide or worldwide sigil, so that it can manifest. If it can reach people's subconscious mind through that image of a man in a hat, then it's easier to manifest in someone's life. It could attach to that in their mind. Kind of like what you said earlier, it attaches to their perception or whatever their perception is. They kind of see it that way. So that could explain a lot of things. But like, for example, people might know about the Babadook, Jeepers Creepers, Freddy Krueger. One of the newest ones is the Crooked Man. That's very much like the Hat Man, very much. I even have an eyewitness where she said, basically it's from The Conjuring 2. They have a character called the Crooked Man that has a wide grin, very skinny, very tall, wearing a hat and also like a coat. This one witness in my film, she said she's seen that in the theater. She ran out of the theater like having an anxiety attack. She was like hard to breathe and panicky, and she said she couldn't go back in for a while. She said that felt like that was seeing the Hat Man in the flesh. She saw whoever created that character, that looks exactly how her Hat Man looked like. She's seen him over and over again with a wide grin and pale face.
All right. So again, it seems like, you know, I get the interdimensional aspect of this, but so many people having this kind of visitation from this being and it kind of altering and how it looks and appears to people, it's really interesting. And you're right. Is this something that, like pop culture, the more we talk about it, the stronger it gets, like a tulpa, a thought form. So is that its intention? In order to break on through and become a more solid form, does it need more attention, more fear, more recognition?
I personally think that it's not a tulpa, because the majority of the eyewitnesses, they say that they've never heard of the Hat Man and they've never seen him in the past. So and once they see him, they get a vibe in their head or like a message saying, Google it Google it, write it down on Google. So they go to Google and they type in man in a hat and coat silhouette, or they type in shadow man in a coat in my room. And then all the images pop up and everything. So usually with a sigil, like what you said, people have to, like, kind of like Slender Man, they kind of have to put it out there. Everyone kind of talks about it. They throw in their theories, their ideas, their fake stories and all that stuff. And it kind of creates this like tulpa thought form where people are kind of creating this thing in the ethereal realm. And it's kind of in reverse with the Hat Man, where he's already kind of existed and he's just trying to put his image out there or attach to an image. So that way it's easier for him to manifest. It's easier for him to attack people. And that's my opinion in general, based on the research, is that it's in reverse. The Slender Man was basically a fake created idea by Eric Knudsen online. And then that created its own kind of tulpa, you know, entity in the ethereal. But the Hat Man's in reverse. It's he's kind of always existed, and this is the form it takes in modern times. But I kind of traced it back to 1750. There was a Sandman ad. It's a wine, and if people type that up on Google, Sandman wine 1750, they'll see the image of the Hat Man on this wine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, and after, it's weird too, because like if you do research Hat Man stories, the 1750, like then and on, is when people started seeing like Hat Man type stuff. But it seems more like this entity has attached itself either to that image or has influenced someone to create that image.
It's interesting that you said you were able to go back that far. Now, were you able to find, you know, now that we can access things like newspapers.com and there are papers that go back into the 1700s, were you able to find any phenomena where people claim to see these beings in the past?
Yeah, I came across one story where Indians would claim that they seen the Hat Man. And I believe he was called Walking Sam. And they would see him in the forest, and he would tell kids to commit suicide. Well, actually, I'm saying this wrong. These Indians would see this tall, lanky, hatted man in the forest, and around in this area, kids of our day started killing themselves in this area. And the Indians warned them, saying there's an entity there that's they had a specific name for it, and I forgot. But they said that it tries to get teenagers to commit suicide, and the teenagers were calling it Walking Sam. So that was one of the weirdest things. That one kind of goes back. And another witness told me she found an article, and I read it, but I don't know if I believed it, where another Indian reservation would see these Hat Men on the side of hills far away, and they called them some type of entity spirits.
Well, then to realize that this is happening so often and through so many different belief systems, you know, and especially going back in history, something that you can detail, that really opens up a whole new concept, because if it's part of Native American culture and lore, that means the concept that this is a ghost of somebody from the 20s, 30s, or 40s, maybe even early 50s, doesn't really seem to fit in, because the Native American culture has this being predating any of those stories. Of course, they've worn hats in the past. We know the Pilgrims wore iterations of hats, and in the 1800s and the 1700s, there were derbies and fedoras and things like that. But it's just, it's still a very unusual scenario that this has a cross-cultural reference.
Yeah, I also, what didn't make the film, but it was in my research, is I interviewed a man. I can't say his name because he didn't want to be part of the film after all, but he was a high-ranking occultist and warlock in Santeria, in occultism and spiritualism. I don't know if you're familiar with those terms of dark magic and sorcery, right, and stuff like that. But he was high ranking, and he had a lot of contracts, he claimed, with different entities, different demonic entities. And so I got a hold of him, and I interviewed him for a bit, and I asked him, he asked me, he's like, okay, so why are you doing a documentary on this shadow man, this Hat Man, whatever they call it now? And then I was like, oh, I'm just interested in the subject. I think it should be out there in the public. And And then he's all, okay. He's all, well, I'll tell you exactly what the Hat Man is, whatever they call it. He kept saying that. He's all, the Hat Man, he's all, it's a high-ranking demon. He's all, I had a contract with it when I was in the occult. And he's all, and he was high-ranking. He wasn't just like, you know, your Satanist around the corner. He was very deep in this. He, you know, he killed chickens and he did all the Santeria stuff, okay? And he said, he's all, I had a contract with this entity. He's all, I knew its rank in the spirit realm. He's all, I knew its name. And he's all, and if you piss me off real bad, he's all, that's the first thing I sent to your house. I killed a chicken, I did the ritual, and then I called the entity up. He's all, and no you address, kidding. Yeah, he's all, and you address it like a family member. He's all, when it comes in the bedroom, he's all, you don't address it like a normal person. You address it respect and like a family member. And he's all, and so he's all, this thing would come in the room. And he's all, and I would tell it to go to so and so's house, or he would have a picture of the person or a lock of hair, whatever. And so this entity would attach to that, go to that person's house. And he told me, he's all, okay, this is phase one. He's all, phase one is it's in the doorway. He's all, it's standing in the doorway and it's giving off a fear that's really terrifying. And he's all, it feels like your heart's going to explode or you're pounding. And he's all, then it comes and reports back to me. And he's all, and if that didn't finish the work, like to really scare you and to really give you like a vibe of like, don't mess with this person. He's all, I send it back to your house again, phase two. And he's all, this time it's closer, either coming out of your closet at the foot of your bed or right in front of your face, but this time it has red eyes. And then I was like, oh my gosh. And he was basically saying like, he's all, yeah, that's the entity that I would send to people's house to really scare the hell out of them. He's all, because that entity will get the job done with scaring the hell out of people. He's all, the other ones, this kind of trickster stuff. But he's all, this is a high ranking one that will really, it's meant to scare the hell out of people, the living hell out of people. That's what he said.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with True Car. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you're going to get an accurate true cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's never any surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a brand new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. Kyle Macias, our guest, as we're talking about his documentary and work on the Hat Man phenomena. The documentary, The Hat Man, Documented Cases of Pure Evil. So you're talking about the fact that this being may be part of the hierarchy of the demonic realm, and that it can be called upon to do the sorcerer's kind of bidding. Most cases, people see this being and it's enough, and they'll like, they're witnessing something, they're watching something, and then they'll vanish or turn around and walk out of the room. Now, what was quite alarming to me was that in your documentary, you talk about, and there are experiencers who have had physical contact with this being, that it not only watches them, but has been known to spring on their bed and start to choke them or suffocate them. How, if you had to put a percentage to it, out of, you know, out of 10 experiencers, how many have had physical contact?
Ooh, I would say from my research, oh my gosh, I'm going to say maybe 7 out of 10. It's not that but it is a big number. Yeah.
7 out of 10 is pretty common. 3 out of 10 is not. But if it's 7 out of 10, that means more than 50% of the people are having a physical altercation with this being. How do they rid themselves? I mean, if this thing's jumping on you to choke and it's kind of this ethereal being, but it feels like a heavy muscular being choking you, how do you fend it off?
Well, I do agree with Lorraine Warren that you do have to have some faith in something that's higher than yourself to really defend yourself in that realm. And when people say spiritual realm, I really do think that it's the same thing as saying another dimension, another reality. And that's just when you're fighting something that's from a different realm, You really have to fight it with different tools that's not from this realm. Yeah, you can have aids like a cross and stuff like that that can help, but you really do have to kind of seek after a higher power to really defend yourself against these things. And that's my opinion, because if you're trying to deal with something that belongs in another realm with tools in this realm, it's just not going to work. And I even have stories where a pastor, okay, so this guy's a pastor, and his daughter keeps seeing the Hat Man, and she tells him. And so they're blessing the house, right? They're blessing the house, and they're saying, in the name of Jesus, we command you to go, and this, that, and the other. And this Hat Man's in the corner, and he's laughing at them, like, ha, 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 like that. And they can't see him, but the daughter sees him. She's all, he's in the corner, and he's laughing. He's all, he's laughing that you're not getting rid of him. So see, something was there with the, in my opinion, with the pastor, that they weren't either strong enough or something with their faith wasn't really locked in. See, there's something that you really have to go deep in who you are to really deal with this Hat Man. It's not just you put a Band-Aid. It's like trying to put a Band-Aid on your arm cut off type thing.
That's really chilling. But I mean, if people are being physically attacked by this being, are they, do you have experiences where they're choking them out to the point they pass out? Or does this thing stop just short of murder or, blacking out?
Yeah, I'll tell you a really disturbing story that I had. And I was going to recreate this, but this was a Hollywood level effects that I didn't have. This one eyewitness, she said that she woke up in her bed and she said she felt like she was being pulled toward the foot of her bed slowly. And she's like, what the hell's going on? She's just kind of waking up and she's like, am I getting pulled to the foot of my bed? And then she hears this loud wind noise, like gush of wind noise, like something real loud. And so she looks at the foot of her bed and she sees this Hat Man on her wall. And next to the Hat Man was this huge, she said, red portal that was swirling. And then she felt like, if I went through that portal, I was not coming back. She said it felt like I was going to go into hell or into the abyss or something. So she said she started screaming. She's all, God, please help me. No, please help me. And then this thing was just watching her, and she can feel her body being being pushed toward this portal. And then she felt this hook come into her shoulder, and something grabbed her and pulled her back. And she realized she was out of body. She was being pulled, and she got pulled back in her body, and she sat back up, and the Hat Man wasn't there. And like what I talked about before, it probably takes your actual essence of who you are, calling on God, calling on something greater, the actual God, to really help you with something like that. But physical attack, to me, that qualifies as a physical attack. It's just in a different dimension. But I do have people where I have another story where a woman, she was fighting her boyfriend. They were in a verbal fight. And so he slammed the door and left. She went to her bedroom. She closed the door. I'm sorry. Let me back up. She went into her bedroom to cry. And as she was crying, her door shut and locked. When she heard it locked, this Hat Man appeared in her room. And she said she levitated and met his arm, his hand in the air. And he started choking her and he was laughing. And her boyfriend was hearing the whole thing. And he was banging on the door saying, let me in. What's going on? What's going on? And then she it let go, and he disappeared.
And that was it. Just some kind of authoritative challenge, and that was enough for it.
Yeah, I never had a story where people he chokes them to death, or not to death, to being passed out. I never had that, but they do feel like they get close to it. I'll put it that way. But I haven't heard a story where they knocked them out.
Now, it seems like, something would force this out. I know that Rosemary Ellen Guiley suggested in the documentary that this may be the djinn that we're dealing with, or a form of the djinn. Do you, understanding the different aspects and the different levels, I know that you kind of investigate all of the different possibilities on this. What was your take on her thoughts on what we might be dealing with?
Yeah, I agree with her wholeheartedly on everything. That was spot on. I do believe that this Hatman is a form of djinn, a high-ranking djinn. I personally believe that if you're talking about a reptilian entity, the tall whites, if you're talking about the djinn, demons, I really do think that these are all part of the same club, and I think that we have genrenized or compartmentalize these things as, okay, well, that's aliens or well, that's djinn. I personally think that when you're talking about djinn, I just think that that's probably one of the original names that these entities have had. And I think it's the same thing as saying demon. Now, I do believe that the research is that the demons kind of have different classification as a djinn would, but I do believe that there are the same entities in that realm, just different verbiage.
Yeah, that very well could be, right? I mean, we kind of, everybody wants to pigeonhole, but maybe it's one and the same. Whatever these beings are, it's one being with many names.
Yeah, and I do believe that Islam or the faith or that culture over there has done a really good job of documenting and really researching what they call the djinn. But I really do believe that they're the same entities, the same dark entities. But I do believe that, because the djinn means hidden ones. So I do believe that they do want to remain hidden for some reason. They do have an agenda.
Speaking of an agenda, we have to take a break. We'll come back. Kyle Macias, our guest, as we continue talking about the Hat Man. We'll do that next right here on Beyond the Darkness. Calling all true crime fans, the Court Junkie Podcast is now once a week on Podcast One. Imagine being wrongfully convicted for a crime you didn't commit, or a killer is still on the loose even though there's enough evidence for an arrest. The Court Junkie Podcast shines a light on the injustices of the judicial system through deep dives into court documents and interviews with those closest to the case. Download new episodes of Court Junkie Podcast every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave. That's Tim. Kyle Macias, our guest. We're talking about his documentary, The Hat Man, Documented Cases of Pure Evil. Kyle, we were talking about some of the physical attacks. Has it left any physical issues behind? Have we seen fingerprint marks, bruising, anything that has a physical attribute left behind with these attacks?
There's been some witnesses where they see the Hat Man and they have an experience. They wake up and their pillow is scratched, or other instances.
What do you mean their pillow is scratched?
Oh, not scratched. It's kind of like as if something kind of scratched it or ripped it.
Freddy Krueger like.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And you have to wonder, like, okay, where did that come? Like, with Freddy Krueger, you know, where did that come from? And actually, we touch on that in the film. There's a little interview of Robert Englund, who it's kind of interesting connection with the maybe that possibly the Hat Man. But the Hat Man was reported before Freddy Krueger, and a lot of people make that misconception that, oh, maybe people are pulling from Freddy Krueger subconsciously and they're dreaming about him still, you know. But no, the Hat Man encounters, there's so many of them predating the Nightmare on Elm Street. But yeah, so we have the scratches. Sometimes the doors are moved. I know people can't really document that, but like if he'll peek out of a closet, you know, even while people are watching TV. I have stories like that where people are watching TV. There's a couple watching TV, and he peeks out of the closet and looks at them. And this time he has a full face with a big grin on it, and then he goes back into the closet. And obviously the door moves because the door opens and then he comes out, looks at them, and the door closes. But, you know, you can't really document something like that with the door moving. Other times people do have marks on their bodies after seeing the Hat Man. And sometimes, yeah, even scratches or like choking marks.
All right. So there has been some physical work left behind. Now, what about the psychological aspect of these people? You know, I noticed one thing in your documentary, and I don't know if it was put there on purpose or what, but there was one scene where the person's laying in bed and they see the shadow man with the hat at the end of their bed. And when you would cut away and it would walk away, I also noticed you had a coat rack with a hat on top of it and a long jacket hanging from it. Do you know which scenes I'm referring to?
Yeah. And what's go ahead.
So was that done purposely? And if so, then what can we tell about the psychological component of this? Are people that are witnessing this people that are under high stress? Are they maybe some of them in physically abusive relationships, the ones that are being attacked by this manifestation? Are they dabbling in different aspects of the paranormal or occult? What psychologically can you tell us about the type of people that have these encounters, and especially the more physical ones?
Yeah, okay. There is a big difference with that. The people who do have the encounters that are more physical, they tend to be witnesses who are dabbling in the occult. So the wider you open that portal, the more possibility you could bring this thing in and to have physical attack. It's almost like you're inviting it and giving it more power to have physical attack. And on the other hand, people who are not having physical attack but are still seeing him, they're more people that suffer with suicidal thoughts, depression, sometimes anxiety. If they have high levels of negativity in their lives and basically just plain bad luck, this could attract this entity to kind of facilitate that person to kill themselves. It latches on to people's vulnerabilities. So if you do have a disposition toward depression or a disposition toward anxiety that really is a true mental illness and has been proven, this entity will notice that and work on that and purposely throw things in your life to eventually get you to kill yourself or to harm others or possibly join their side. And I'm saying that from experience, because the whole time I was making this film, I've also experienced a whole mess of what you would call gang stalking. Have you heard of gang stalking before?
No, I have not. Please enlighten us.
Oh, okay. So basically the internet has dubbed it now gang stalking or street theater, and it's where you're driving and it's as if a group of people are strategically trying to piss you off or are strategically doing things to kind of make you go crazy. And what I got a lot of when I was creating the film is, like, I would go to the store, I'm just shopping, I'm not doing any interviews or anything, I'm just shopping for groceries, and then someone either like grabs an apple and they so happen to look up at me a certain way and they look down. And then I'm like, what was that? And then, you know, and then I'm driving or I'm somewhere else. And then someone's looking at me a certain way, that same look, the same look on their face. I had a lot of that. And then it would be accompanied by synchronicities at the same time of, like, their license plate said 666 on it or 333 on it, 111. So it was like a mixture of synchronicities and certain looks. And so when I told Rosemary Ellen Guiley about this, she told me, she said, yeah, she's all, you're on the radar of the dark side. You're on the radar of the djinn, basically. And she was all like, since you're looking into them, they're letting you know through people and through synchronistic numbers that they're looking into you. They're also watching you now. And it's funny because I'll even get, there'll even be words that people say to me in daily life, like, oh, well, we're watching you, Kyle. And it's like, okay, like they're joking, but I feel the message from the entity through them saying, well, we're watching you. But the conversation had nothing to do with that. And basically that's called gang stalking. Or like if you're driving and you keep getting cut off a certain same way, that's called gang stalking. And usually it's meant for psychological attack from the dark side. It's almost as if they're using people as puppets or as drones, kind of like in The Matrix, where anyone's vulnerable to be an agent. It's very much similar with the djinn and with demons.
The veracity to which these attacks take place, you know, do people feel that their life is truly in danger, or do you believe this thing is attacking to provoke high levels of fear, like it's an energy vampire feeding off of that endorphin rush?
Ooh, yeah, no, I definitely believe that it's both. There are some cases where he just tries to raise the level of adrenaline in a person to suck that fear right out of them. And then there's other cases where people say, no, I know he wants to hurt me, and I know he's going to take me to hell one day. I know it's the devil. That's what they say. I know it's the devil, and he's going to take me. He's going to take my soul. And they feel like every time they see him, they feel like that's exactly what's going to happen. My time is up, and this thing's going to take my soul. That's the majority of the witnesses, is one or the other.
Wow. That's terrifying that they know. Have you asked them? And this is a tough bit, but why do they feel that they're going to hell? Is there something in their lives that they've done that would make them feel that level of fear for the end of their life?
Yeah, basically, I came across something strange that was interesting while doing the research. And what it was is that people tell me when they have a bad experience, a terrifying experience with the Hat Man, it's not just a fear that you feel like you're driving and you feel you almost get hit, right? And that fear jumps into your throat, or someone pops out at you real quick at, like, you know, at a horror festival or something, and then you get that adrenaline rush, or you get that fear, or, you know, someone pulls out a gun and you get that fear in your throat and you get paralyzed. They're saying it's not so much like that fear. It's more of a fear that you feel in your soul. And he's all like, it's a fear that you feel in your spirit, which is a different kind of fear. It's like a fear for your eternal being, is what they say. One guy I interviewed in the film, his name's Tim, and he actually served in our military, and he's also a police officer. And I told him, I said, well, you've been in harm's way, so what's scarier, the Hat Man or when you're out there on the field? And he's all the Hat Man. By far, he's all, that is far more scary. He's all, because when I was at war, he's all, you're focusing on the mission and you're focusing on defending your fellow soldiers. And he's all, so you kind of have everyone's back. And he's all, and if something bad happens, you're trained to recover from it, and your mind, not recover from it, but in the situation, you're trained to recover from it. But he's all, but with the Hat Man, there is no training. And there is no, what do I do next? It's just a naked fear of not knowing what to do, and a panic that this thing has the ability to take my soul, or has the ability to terrify my soul, not just my physical body and brain, is what he said. And I found that interesting. And one of the eyewitnesses too, I'm not going to say who it is because she wanted to keep this private, but she said that she believed that she died and went to hell. She was ironing in her bedroom, and she slipped and she hit between her bed and the wall, and she knocked herself out. And she said that she felt like she exited her body and she was going toward the center of the earth, and she said she can hear people screaming and she can feel the heat, and she hit the bottom of this hell place, whatever it is. And then she said she could feel the rocks were sharp, and she was running, trying to find a way out. And she said she can see people in pits burning. And she said part of her torture was she can hear her children on the earth on top, growing older slowly. Like they were growing older as she was there. Now I'm not trying to, you know, project any beliefs onto people. I'm just reporting what people are claiming that they see, you know, because this woman also claimed that she's seen the Hat Man as well. And that's kind of terrifying. You know, if those two things exist, you know, I don't want any of those to exist, you know.
Have any of these people that have had these hell experiences when dealing with this, have they done anything to alter the path of their life? I wonder if this is a wraith, a precursor to death, a warning that you're on the wrong path and you need to change. Have you heard any of them say, you know, after I had this, I really kind of changed my life around?
She's one of the first ones that I've heard of a hell experience. And also the other one I was telling you about where she felt like she was going to go into hell through that portal. Most of them, they suffer quietly. That meaning they experience this thing and they don't want to tell nobody from fear of ridicule, and for fear of maybe going crazy or thinking they're crazy, is what they tell me. life change. I didn't really talk to them about any life changes, but they do feel concerned, and they just hope that they never go there if they do pass on into that place. They just hope that they never go there again. But most people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to deal with it. But no, I agree with you. I'd want to investigate any possibility of me avoiding that place. I do know people have different theories. You know, the old term for hell is Sheol in the ancient Hebrew. And there's people say that its destination is the center of the earth, or it's an interdimensional destination where the reptilians live and stuff. So, who knows what's going on, but I think it should be investigated further, you know, what the hell is going on this planet, you know?
Yeah, that is, that opens up a whole new string of high strangeness when it comes to...
Oh, but you mentioned, you mentioned Wraith, though, and yeah, I do believe that he's in the class of that type of entity, because one eyewitness, he kept seeing the Hat Man before or after a family member has passed away. So, like, he would be watching TV in his living room, and it would be dark, and just the TV would be on, and then he would notice in the corner of eye some movement. He would look, and this Hat Man would be in the corner in the dark. And then, like, a week later, his uncle passed away. And then another event in his life, his mom passed away, and then the Hat Man was at the funeral. He was off in the distance behind a tree while they were burying the mom. And he said that he was in his own place and he just ignored him. He was already in his own little mind of hell, losing his mom. But he did notice the Hat Man was behind a tree far away. So he is associated with death in a lot of cases. I mean, even one where a whole party of people, like in their teens and 20s, there was a party and they seen the Hat Man at the same time. He was they were playing the Ouija board. And the Ouija board spelt "look outside." So they all looked outside, and they're on the second story building of an apartment. And he's across the street, this Hat Man, and he's about, like, they said he was like almost 10 feet tall, and he was under a street light, but he was already looking up at them as they approached the window. And they were all looking like, what the hell is that? And this thing, I believed it had like a, he said it had like a morphing thing around it, like as if time was bending around it. It was very strange. But he found out later that the mom of that apartment was committed suicide. I mean, no, I'm sorry, didn't commit suicide. She attempted to commit suicide, and she was hospitalized.
When you're working on a documentary like this, speaking to people that have had these experiences, and such profound experiences, were you ever afraid that you were going to irritate something and have it start to muck with you in your life?
Yeah, when I first went into it, I wasn't that much concerned, but I did have it on the back burner in my mind that it could be a possibility that this thing could either manifest to me or manifest to people around me, and it has. Trying to think which one to start with. My sister claimed to have seen it probably about 2 months ago. So this one's recent. And it made itself known to her, and she was driving to the gym early in the morning. I think it was 4:30 in the morning. She was driving to the gym. And so it was still kind of dark out, and she was driving and she looked down at her phone. She was going to change a song on her phone. So she looks down real quick and she looks up, and this Hat Man's in the middle of the road. And she said he was tall. He was like 9 feet tall, and she's all black, wide brim hat. And she swerved because she thought it was a person, you know, while you're driving. She swerved and swerved around it. She looked in her rearview mirror, and he was still there. And she didn't tell me this till like 2 weeks later after the event, because she didn't want to talk about it. And then I was like, oh my gosh. And she hates this type of stuff. She does not want to talk about it. She's had her own experiences with shadow people, and she hates the paranormal because it freaks her out. She doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to deal with it. So it took her a while to tell me, but he has made himself known. And do you guys know of David Weatherly?
Yes. Yeah. He's been a longtime friend and guest on our show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He I was talking to him for a bit to see if he'd be interviewed, because he's also seen the grinning man type, and people have also seen the Hat Man with black eyed children. And that's a whole other subject as well. But I remember I was driving with my parents to a jet show in Huntington Beach, and I got a message from him, right? So I picked up my phone, I looked at it, I'm like, oh, he's messaging me. And then right when I was looking at my phone, my mom started screaming, and she's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And this is all happening in the car. And then she's like, oh my gosh, did you see that? And my dad's all, yeah, I saw it, but it was on the corner of my eye. And then my mom's all, oh my gosh. I'm like, what happened? She's all, there was a man in a hat sitting at the bus stop, and he looked right at me, and he had this pale white face. And she saw, and then they were freaking out because they already knew I was doing a documentary on the Hat Man, and they seen this thing. And then I was looking around, and I was looking at the opposite side of the street when he was on the right side of the street, and I didn't see him. But if I didn't get the text from David Weatherly, I would have seen him sitting at the bus stop.
Talk about weird timing and synchronicity then.
Oh, completely. That's all there has been, is weird synchronicities throughout making the film. I get a lot of, like, I'm driving and then someone like cuts in front of me and the license plate says 666 on it. I get a lot of that. So there's a lot of that type of, yeah, but it's strange. It's strange.
The kind of phenomena that takes place and the fact that there is some missing time, it has that very alien nature and element to it. It also has this demonic sense and feel to it. Others believe it to be the Men in Black and that they are just cloaking themselves. We have a friend of ours, Bill Murphy, whose family had connections with the Kennedys and such, and after the assassination, they would witness a being with a hat, a shadow being with a hat that would be seen. And for some reason, they were getting the impression that the hat was part of its teleportation or cloaking device. You know, what do you make of those concepts of what this being might be?
I personally believe that this Hat Man is its own entity, and the Men in Black are kind of its own class of entities as well. I believe that the Men in Black are more for information control, and they're more of silencing people. The Hat Man's more of like he enjoys to terrify people. I know the Men in Black also have that foreboding feeling and hypnosis feeling, but they're more like, you know, you saw this UFO, you're not going to talk about it. And yeah, I have read those stories, and they sound more inhuman than human with the Men in Black. But I think the Hat Man is a separate entity that also likes to wear a hat and cloak. But I think it does fall more into the alien, high-ranking, interdimensional evil being than it does the Men in Black. Because you're right, yeah, he has more of alien attributes. And I've also the only connection I kind of made with the Men in Black and the Hat Man is there was one eyewitness I interviewed that he believed he seen the Hat Man while he was abducted, but he called them dreams. And when I told him, I'm like, do you think they were dreams? And he was kind of bleeding more back and forth, like, well, I believe it actually happened, but I'd rather believe that they are dreams than they actually happened. Like, his own psyche would rather believe that it's kind of just a dream than he was actually abducted. But he does believe, in the most fearful sense, that he was abducted. But he said he woke up and he was on this table and he seen these little grays at the foot of the table. And then behind it in the corner was this Hat Man, this shadow man in the corner, very tall, wide brim hat and a coat, but all black. And he told me, he's all, I always thought that was a Men in Black or someone that worked for the government. But he's all, when I found out my wife seen the Hat Man in the doorway when she was younger at her house, when she described this Hat Man, he's all, that's exactly what I seen behind the grays. And when I did my research more into other people's stories, even just online, people have claimed to have seen the Hat Man with some type of alien encounter. And I just interviewed a guy a couple days ago where he's had a UFO abduction encounter, and he's also seen the Hat Man a couple weeks after he messed with the Ouija board with his friends. And see, there's a connection to that. See, I don't think that this thing's in this camp, the alien camp or the demon camp or the jinn camp. I really do think that these things are all interconnected. And that's what Rosemary Ellen Guiley believed as well.
In dealing with this, is there any other precursors to the phenomena. Do people start hearing or seeing or witnessing other things, and it slowly makes its way into the Hat Man phenomena?
Oh, very much so. So the Ouija board would be number one. I have a lot of encounters where I ask them, I'm like, oh, so have they tell me their encounter, and I say, have you ever dabbled in the occult, or have you ever done any witchcraft or anything like that? And they say, yeah, I did the Ouija board once with my friends, or my mom used to do the Ouija board a lot with her friends. So it seems that that's one of the main things. Another main thing is if the person is has depression, they would usually see shadow people or the Hat Man accompanied with their depression episodes. It seems as if this entity likes to feed off that dark vibe. I'm not saying that if you have depression, that that's like you're causing the Hat Man in your life. I'm just saying that this, it seems as if this Hat Man likes to feed off that negativity that you're already suffering from. Other people, it's through, it kind of connects to the demonic type aspect, is that, if they're abused, sexually abused as a kid, they start seeing the Hat Man after that. I have one story, and she wanted to stay anonymous. Remember, I interviewed a whole bunch of people. The ones that made the film are like a small amount, but I interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people. One eyewitness, she said that she was sexually abused by her uncle, and she started seeing the Hat Man after that. And she even seen him in the corner, like after she was abused, and almost as if he was smiling, like he enjoyed watching it type thing. So there's a lot of stuff like that where he enjoys watching people being tortured, being, you know, probably the worst level of abuse.
That's really bizarre. All right. Throughout the documentary, you know, you do show many of these different stories, the different people's beliefs and concepts. Was there any parts that you had to leave out of the documentary that you felt might be equally as important, but just didn't line up with this part of the story?
Not really. I just, the stories that interest me the most and that I think would be fun as a filmmaker to include, those are the ones I went with. But I can't really think of anything that I omitted because it didn't fit the storyline. There were some disturbing stories where it would take more production value to recreate. Like some people seen him, like with hoof feet, like hoof legs.
Oh, and so cloven hoof.
Yeah, exactly. Some people, there was very few of those, but those stories were pretty disturbing. They would, like, one woman, she seen him as a kid, and she was sleeping. She felt like someone was watching her, so she turns around, and in the doorway is this Hat Man. But she said he had like hoof feet, and then she said he had like a tail, like a demon type tail. And then she got scared, and she was trembling, and she turned over and started praying. And then she fell asleep. She woke up the next morning. She told her mom, and her mom said, "See, I told you." She's all, "You disrespect." She was a Mexican family. And she said, "I told you, you disrespected me yesterday, Saul. The devil came to you." That's what she said. "The devil came to you to intimidate you because you disrespected me." And that's very that's probably not the reason why, but that's very Mexican, because I'm Mexican. That's a very Mexican thing to do. Like, "Oh, see, the devil came to you. That's why, because you disrespected me." But yeah, there's stories where he has hoof feet, and that's disturbing. I mean, that really falls into the camp of fallen angels and also demonic. But there's a misconception, I don't know if you guys know about this, but a demon, by definition, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew text and the Book of Enoch, a demon is a hybridization of when the fallen angels, the watchers, came down and intermingled with the seed of man. I mean, a lot of Christians don't know that, they forget about that. So a demon is more of a hybrid being with these fallen angels. A fallen angel is basically exactly what it says. It's an angelic being that has decided to rebel against the creators. I don't know if you guys heard of that before, the Watchers or the Book of Enoch. Yeah.
Well, that's what I've felt, that in some instances, some of these shadow encounters are the Watchers, because people will encounter them in their room at night. They wake up to see these beings standing near their bed. And like I said, there's that moment of shock and awe, like, holy hell, what are they doing here? And then on the other side of it, they're like, oh, okay. Once we've seen it, they've acknowledged it, they feel calm enough to go back to sleep. Now, if you and I were standing at the end of their bed, they would obviously go into fight or flight mode. But something dark and malevolent, in some cases, there are multiple versions standing around your bed. I've often wondered if those are the watchers, because that would be when we might be the most vulnerable. If our soul does leave our bodies at night to astral travel and project, maybe they're there to watch our physical form and alert us, wake us up if something of danger is happening, to bring us back in. And then you think, in these rare instances of not even so rare anymore, but sleep paralysis, when people wake up and they're in that mode of sleep paralysis and they sense something coming towards them, something ethereal that they can't see, but it's terrifying to them. They can't breathe right. They feel all this. I often wonder, are they in a sense bilocating, where their physical form is now awake, but their spiritual form has not returned? And what they're truly feeling is their spiritual form returning to them. And that's why, as it feels like it gets closer, 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 bam, all of a sudden you have ability over your extremities again. Is there a tie-in to that? And I'm curious what your thoughts on that concept might be.
Yeah, I do believe that sleep paralysis, when you go to sleep, I do believe that there is a function that does prevent you from moving. But I also believe that these entities could access that and turn it on. So if you do become awake while you're sleeping, they do have the access to turn this ability on, where you're still, where they have the access to paralyze you, basically. What we already have in our brains, they probably know how to turn it off and on. But no, I agree with you that I believe that when you're in sleep paralysis and you're seeing these entities and you can't move and you're experiencing a high level of fear, I do believe that you are, in a sense, astral traveling, but your astral body has not left the physical body. You're stuck there. It's almost as if they could, like I said, they could turn it on and they could have you that way, where you're actually, you're more of your spiritual senses and astral body is turned on. Your eyes are opened, but your body is still in that sleep mode. So I do agree with you on that. I do believe that you're in a form, in a sense, you're kind of like astral traveling, but without leaving your body. And it is a form of an attack. They love to do that because, you know, no one's ever really felt paralyzed before in your life until that happens. And you have no idea what to do. You have absolutely no idea what to do.
All right. Now, is there any defense against these beings on the regular to keep them from coming back? Was it prayer? Is crystals, anointing oil, Twinkie cream, anything that you can use, put around you, ingest, that will make you less accessible to them?
I personally, what's worked for me is anointing oil, to be honest. And if you anoint your doorways with like a cross, like if you dip your finger in the anointing oil and you do like the shape of the cross over your doorways and you do them over your walls and around the house, that really does help. And it actually does kick these entities out of your house, actually. That's helped with me, because I actually did that before making the film, knowing that there's a possibility that they could try to intimidate me from stopping making the film. And I did experience a lot of different stuff, but not manifestations in my bedroom. But for the eyewitnesses, sometimes evoking the name of Jesus Christ works, prayer works, but it's not one size fits all type thing. So what works for one person doesn't mean it'll work for another person. Jason Offit, who I also interviewed in the film, he said that laughing at the entity, or not caring, not letting them feed off you, kind of let they kind of move on. The shadow people kind of move on. But see, with the hat man,
so we almost treat it like we do the being from It, Pennywise. The minute you stop giving it strength and kind of laugh it off and show that you're not afraid, it begins to lose its power, grip, or hold on you.
Exactly. And that seems to be key, because that's what the hat man wants as well. And when you don't give it to him, he'll try something else. Like he'll get closer, or he'll try a different form, or he'll do this. But I did interview a witness where she was like, no, go away. And then he started shaking the bed. And then she's all, and she got kind of scared, but she's like, no, I'm not scared no more. Leave me alone. And then she said he started like moving stuff on her table. And then he was throwing a fit, like, look at me and be scared of me. And she was refusing to. So that would be key for a lot of people. But the thing is that with this Hat Man, he really does try over and over and over and over to try to scare people when they least expect it.
All right. We'll come to a wrap up here. We do have a link to the documentary. How can people find more information about you and your work? And are you planning on doing a follow up on this documentary?
I'm not really planning a follow up, but there was a lot of pushback for this to even come out. There was a lot of, like, I guess you would call it demonic attacks, pushback, discouragement. There was a lot of trouble while editing the film. So I don't think I'm going to do a follow up on it.
What do you mean trouble editing the film? What type of things were taking place?
I bought a new MacBook computer, completely new, and I downloaded a completely new editor, and I kept having problems. Like the system kept crashing. Anytime I was editing a scene with the Hat Man, it would glitch out or forbade me from editing. And I'd have to restart the system, and then I would come up, and then certain files were deleted. like I would be editing the film, and then when the eyewitness was talking, their audio was deleted. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, why is that happening? And then I would put I would redo the audio. It was hard to find, or like it just wasn't. It was mostly it was trying to mess with the audio, where the audio just wasn't popping up. There was a lot of that. There was a lot of synchronistic numbers. Like when I started rendering the film, it gives you a time of like how long the render will take, or it gives you like a percentage number, and it would purposely pause like at 111, and then it would pause at 333, 666, 444, back to like, and it would go back and forth 333, like synchronistic numbers, like almost sending me a message like, we know you're editing it. There was a lot of stuff like that. Basically, when I see these numbers, they were more related toward the demonic type stuff. So there was a lot of that, problems with editing. There was even problems with eyewitnesses, like when they sent me their like they had to sign stuff, like they had to sign that they're giving me right to interview them.
The waiver, sure.
Yeah, the waiver. Yeah, and there would be problems just sending that over to me. Like they would say, "Well, I sent it," and I would say, "Well, I'm checking my trash and junk in emails, and I haven't got anything." And then they would say, "Well, I'll try sending it again." There was a lot of stuff like that too.
Well, thank you for putting it out there, making it available for people. It's a fascinating documentary, about an hour and a half long, lots of interesting information and a lot of personal stories that people share throughout. As we leave, what would you say was probably one of the most unnerving stories that you were able to get in this documentary?
Toward the end, we talk about the grinning man phenomena, and those were probably the most disturbing, because it's one thing to see the Hat Man pitch black. It's another when you see his face. And one of the eyewitnesses, she says, that's what she says. She says, you know, it's one thing to see a shadow of a person in your room and think, okay, is that being projected on the wall, or am I just seeing that? And it's another thing where you wake up and there's a man in your room, but he has a totally demonic face. So to me, those are the most disturbing ones, where he has a wide grin hat, sharp teeth, but they're like sharks. They're like a creature's teeth. And then he usually has reptilian-like eyes. And those, to me, are probably the most disturbing, because they feel like they're going to be eaten by this thing. This thing's going to eat them and chew them up to the bone. That's what they say. So I would say those are the most disturbing. And people could watch that in the film toward the end. We talk about the grinning man phenomena.
Right, which is strange, because through the years we've talked about things like shadow people, the Hat Man, black-eyed kids that you alluded to. Another character that made himself known is the Bloody Bones Man, and he looks very Freddy Krueger-like, like a skinned man, and usually he has a very large, yellowed smile and big creepy eyes that some have referred to as very reptilian, some have just referred to as yellowish and jaundiced and creepy looking. But, you know, you're seeing these iterations take place. And I wonder if this thing is picking the collective consciousness of experiencers, finding the archetype of what is terrifying in its way of presentation, and why some people don't see the glowing eyes because it knows it doesn't have to put that much effort into it. Others know that, or it knows others need to see something, quote unquote, more terrifying to be witnessed. And that may be why there's an amalgam of these beings and why they look so different.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That's so true. That's so true. I do believe that he does hook onto people's mind, whatever scares them the most. But I do believe that it also has its favorite forms. Like you have your own favorite jacket, favorite hat. It has its favorite forms that it likes to scare people with.
Well, you know, please keep us in mind. And if you get more stories and would like to visit with us again, we'd love to hear more.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I am looking into possibly maybe a documentary on the Black Eyed Kids, maybe a documentary on also this, what you talked about, the Grinning Man type thing, Bloody Bones Man. See, there's something interesting about that. There's something very disturbing about that. But yeah, people can find me if they want to email me their stories. It's hatmandocumentary@outlook.com. And the film is available on Vimeo On Demand. And also the DVD and Blu-ray is available on Amazon. And in about a week, in October, the film will be available on Amazon Prime Video to stream.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Well, we'll put up links to Vimeo and we'll put up links to Amazon so people can find it on today's program. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of the program with us.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Next week, folks, we've got an exciting show lined up for you. We are going to be visiting with Richard Estep next Sunday and talking about the haunting of Fox Hollow Farms. And it's a very creepy story that incorporates everything you guys love about the show. There is murder, mystery, mayhem, and spirits. And you've got to tune in to hear that show. Richard Estep's new book is out regarding the haunting of Fox Hollow Farm. Saturday, we have a great program lined up for you as well. It is the entire cast of the Holzer Files will be on, and you'll get to hear from Alexandra Holzer. You'll get to hear from Shane Pittman, Cindy Kaza, my fellow investigators on the program, and Gabe Roth will round out the program talking about research and work behind the scenes on the show. It is now less than a week away, folks. Make sure you set your DVRs, help support Darkness Dave, and watch The Holzer Files. It starts airing Thursday, October 3rd. Every Thursday for the next 10 weeks, we will be a part of Travel Channel's lineup. I hope that you will tune in and watch it. Remember, if you DVR it, watch it within 3 days because then it counts towards the ratings. So even if you can't watch it, just turn it on in the background and let it play and then get back to it when you can. But any way you could help get these numbers up, it'll help keep the show going. And please spread the word about the program. And also on Friday, October 4th, I will be on the Travel Channel part of Ghost Hunt Live Salem. We've got new additions, Greg and Dana Newkirk from the Traveling Museum of Occult and Supernatural. We've got celebrities from each one of the different paranormal shows on Travel Channel. You've got Katrina Weidman and Jack Osborne from Portals to Hell. You've got the Ghost Brothers are going to be a part of it. You've got Amy Bruni, Adam Berry, Chip Coffey from Kindred Spirits, Cindy Kaza and myself from Holzer Files. It's going to be a great time. And that runs next Friday, October 4th on the Travel Channel. It's a live 4-hour ghost hunt. You can be a part of it by checking out the live video streams on Travel Channel's Facebook page. So you can watch and help direct some of the ghost hunts. If you're seeing things taking place, we can send the teams into those locations to look at it. They're going to be investigating 3 different locations. They're going to be well wired up, live cameras and feeds on all of these. So it's going to be amazing. I hope you'll tune in and check that out. Again, Holzer Files starts airing Thursday, October 3rd. Friday, it'll be a one-off special, Ghost Hunt Live Salem. And you can see me on that program. Saturday, we've got the special edition of Beyond the Darkness that will have the interview with our entire cast and crew of the Holzer Files, Sunday Fox Hollow Farm, and always remember to tune in Tuesdays for the best in true crime talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.